This past Sunday, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner won Argentina's presidential election with 45% of the vote to become her country's first elected female leader. What makes the story even more interesting is that she's also the current First Lady of Argentina. Joining me now to discuss Ms. de Kirchner's political career and campaign victory is Mike Reed, America's editor at The Economist and author of Forgotten Continent, The Battle for Latin America's Soul. It's published by Yale University Press. I'm very pleased to welcome him to this month's Backstory. Hello.
Hello. Nice to be with you.
There were 14 candidates in the race for the presidency, and Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner won with 45% of the vote, which, under Argentina's election law, allowed her to avoid a runoff. Did any of the other candidates pose much of a challenge?
No, not really. I think ever since earlier this year, Néstor Kirchner, Argentina's current president, announced that he would not be seeking a second term and he would be standing down in favor of the candidacy of his wife. It was pretty much of a coronation. There are several reasons for that. One is the strength of Argentina's economic recovery in the past 4 years. That means that Mr. Kirchner himself is very popular. The other is that the opposition is divided and weak. And thirdly, clearly the First Lady, as the First Lady, as well as the presidential candidate, had certain advantages of incumbency.
Now, Nesta could have run for re-election. Do you think he would have won?
I think there's no doubt at all that he would have run. He certainly could have. He could have run, and he almost certainly would have won.
There's been talk of the two spouses alternating terms. Is that rumor? Is there some evidence that that was their plan?
Well, Mr. Kirchner has never actually said publicly what his reasons for not running again were. There's certainly been a lot of talk along the lines that you suggest. They are a political couple. They're sometimes compared with the Clintons, though there are differences as well as similarities. The similarities are that she is a politician in her own right. And they may have had a deal, but a lot of people in Argentina think that he wants to come back in 4 years' time. But voters, of course, may have another view.
Should I call her Cristina, which is the way everyone refers to her in Argentina?
It's the way that she likes to be referred to. There's a tradition of first names attached to Evita Perón, of course. And although Cristina says that she is not Evita, it does no harm to be mentioned in the same breath.
Starting in the 1990s, she's represented Santa Cruz and then later Buenos Aires in the Senate. Has she been an effective senator? Would she have been famous as a senator if she hadn't been married to the president?
I mean, there's no doubt that in the late 1990s, she was the better-known national politician than her husband, who was, as you mentioned, governor of a rather distant Patagonian province. She was one amongst many senators, being in the Casa Rosada, the Pink House, as the presidential palace is called in Buenos Aires, in the past 4 years, has given her a degree of prominence she clearly didn't have before.
Her closest opponent was also a woman, Elisa Carrió, a former legislator who once accused the country's political leaders of managing the illegal drug trade. Was that something that they try to pin on Cristina and Néstor?
Well, Elisa Carrió has campaigned both in this election and in the last election really very much as an anti-corruption crusader. I think some of her accusations have more substance behind them than others. And that particular one that you mentioned certainly wasn't a big issue in the campaign.
Well, haven't there been some corruption scandals in the years of Néstor's government? Over the summer, right before Cristina announced her candidacy, the finance minister, Felicia Michelli, resigned after thousands of dollars in cash were found in her office. She said she was going to use them to make a down payment on a house.
Yes, there have indeed, as you say, been several corruption scandals in the last year or so. You mentioned one of them. There was another over a series of front companies set up over a pipeline contract from a government entity. And there was another one involving a mysterious businessman with a large sum in cash who was on a plane coming from Venezuela with a series of Venezuelan and Argentine officials. And Mr. Kirchner's government, of course, has been very close to Hugo Chavez. And we haven't got to the bottom of that particular case yet.
But it looks like somebody was being bribed or paid off.
Yeah, I mean, between Argentina and Venezuela, under Kirchner and Chavez, there is a barter trade agreement under which Argentina imports diesel fuel from Venezuela in return for a series of products such as agricultural machinery and so on. And it's the government that chooses which particular Argentine companies get those contracts.
Well, what about Hugo Chavez, who's a very controversial figure, at least in this country? Is he not in Venezuela?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand your question.
Do Venezuelans look upon Hugo Chavez differently than people in this country do?
Well, I think one has to recognize that around 60% of Venezuelans like Hugo Chavez support him and have regularly voted for him. Around 40% dislike him and have regularly voted against him. Of the 60% who support him, I think many do so because they feel identified with him. They see him as one of them. Others do simply because the oil price has given him large sums of money, which he has bestowed upon social programs and so forth.
But I was asking about how Argentinians view Hugo Chavez.
I misunderstood you. Well, I think that the closeness of Argentinians with the closeness of the of the Kirchner government to the Chavez government is double-edged. I mean, I think there's some people amongst the poorer Argentines, the supporters of Kirchner, who do like Hugo Chavez, but I think there are others who dislike him. And I think that Cristina will, without breaking openly with Hugo Chavez, I think she will move to discreetly distance herself.
Well, Venezuela is an oil-producing country, and Argentina has a growing economy and no oil to speak of, so that might also be a reason. My guest is Mike Reed, America's editor at The Economist, author of Forgotten Continent, The Battle for Latin America's Soul, which is published by Yale University Press. This is WNYC. WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. This has also been one of the coldest winters in South America in decades, and Argentina cut down on the amount of natural gas that it's sending to its neighbor Chile. Is that because Argentina is trying to conserve the gas for itself?
That's correct. No, I mean, it is trying to conserve it for itself, but it's also a consequence of the energy policy pursued by Néstor Kirchner in the past 4 years. I mean, when he came in, he maintained a price freeze on energy, on natural gas, on oil products, and so forth. And that had the predictable effect of increasing demand and reducing supply. So that on average, energy prices in Argentina are now only 60% of the level in neighboring countries. And Argentina is consuming more. There hasn't been much investment in expanding natural gas production or in discovering new reserves because there's very little incentive to do that. So the government has got by with a series of energy fixes. One has been to cut exports to Chile, and another has been to expand a pipeline to Bolivia, and so forth. But sooner or later, they're going to have to put the prices up.
Well, it's also probably not going to make Argentina very popular in the region right now, especially with Chile, which also just elected a woman as its president.
That's correct. It's a growing trend in the region. I mean, in the case of Michelle Bachelet in Chile, she was, in fact, the first woman who was elected to the presidency in Latin America who did not owe her election to being the wife or widow of a famous husband. But across the region, there are more women in higher levels of politics than there have been in the past.
Are Argentina's energy problems a holdover from the 2001 economic collapse?
They are, in a way, in the sense that that collapse was absolutely traumatic. Poverty. Argentina's traditionally been quite a rich country, and until the 1970s, it was basically a middle-class society. But with the economic collapse of 2001-2002, poverty increased dramatically to more than half the population. Unemployment got up to 20-25%. And the government, both of Mr. Kirchner and the one before that, froze tariffs for social reasons. Now, I mean, their critics think that that was okay at the time, but it was a policy that you had to replace with targeted subsidies to those who really couldn't afford to pay. But at the moment, the middle class in Argentina is getting very cheap energy.
Is the middle class behind, Cristina? What were the basic campaign themes? We mentioned Elisa Carrió, another candidate, Roberto Lavagna, who was an economy minister fired by Nestor Kirchner, also was running against her. Did they go after her for her record as a legislator, or were they going after her for her husband's record?
It was a strange campaign. I mean, there was very little debate about policy, really. She was out of the country a lot during the campaign. She held very few rallies until the last couple of weeks. She hardly spoke to the press, the local press, until the last week or so. She was really campaigning on her husband's economic record. Roberto Lavagna, whom you referred to, was really in many ways the architect of the policies of the recovery, although he was dumped in 2005, and he put himself forward as a more responsible guardian of that recovery than Kirchner's.
Why wasn't he credited with having affected that recovery instead of Kirchner?
Because he is a technocrat, he's not a very effective politician, and he was competing for the same segment of the vote, the same segment of the electorate as they were. He was not really campaigning as opposition.
You said that Cristina didn't campaign around the country. In fact, she went abroad visiting France, Germany, Ecuador, Spain, Mexico, Brazil, and the United States. Was that something that her large lead in the polls allowed her to do, or was that some kind of a campaign strategy?
I think it was both. I think it was something that her large lead allowed her to do, but it was also the campaign strategy to present her election as almost a coronation, almost a fait accompli.
Uh-huh. Was it also a jump start on diplomacy because Nestor Kirchner has a reputation for not being all that interested in diplomacy?
That's absolutely right. I mean, I think one of the changes that we will see under Cristina is that Argentina will have a foreign policy. I mean, some people say that under Nestor it hasn't. He was famous for not bothering to see distinguished visitors to Argentina. He barely traveled outside the country except for a few trips to Venezuela and a couple of trips to Spain. She's been making up for that, and she's made it clear that she thinks that good relations with the United States and with Europe are important.
Were they official trips as First Lady, or were they trips as a candidate?
Well, most were official trips as First Lady, but she was the First Lady and the candidate.
Some have said that Kristina will seek a new relationship with the United States if Hillary Clinton becomes president. And did she visit Hillary here?
She did. She met her in 2004, and she's expressed sympathy for Mrs. Clinton. I think there won't be much change in relations while George Bush remains in the White House, but I think after the next election in the United States, Argentina will be looking to improve relations.
Well, the Kirchners have been compared to the Clintons, and there are certain similarities. The two met in law school. She has been a senator, and she's been one of her husband's advisors during his presidency. But she seems to bridle at those comparisons.
Well, I think she likes to be seen as, you know, a very Argentine politician, you know, which she is. I mean, she's sometimes welcome to comparison, but I mean, she likes to be seen as herself. In terms of the positions in the Democratic Party in the United States, I mean, Kristina's policies would be more similar to those of John Edwards, for example, than to Hillary Clinton. I mean, she's a populist from the left wing of the Peronist movement in Argentina, even if she sometimes appears to be a little more moderate than her husband on some things.
And we'll take a little break. When we come back, I want to address that whole business of Peronism, whether it's left-wing, right-wing, and how this whole thing plays out. My guest is Mike Reed, America's editor at The Economist and the author of Forgotten Continent, The Battle for Latin America's Soul, which is published by Yale University Press. We're talking about the new president of Argentina, Cristina Fernández de Kirchner, on today's Backstory. And we're back with Mike Reed on Backstory. He's the America's editor at The Economist and the author of Forgotten Continent, The Battle for Latin America's Soul, which is published by Yale University Press. Can you clear up the whole business of Peronism? Because it's very confusing to someone like me. Juan Perón always came across to me as a Latin American version of Mussolini and Franco, if not Hitler. Which would mean very, very right wing, and yet he was always enjoyed the support of the poor people, which would suggest, and he's often called a populist. So how does this work out?
Yeah, it's confusing, isn't it? I think he is a populist. You're absolutely right. Perón himself, well, he was a military officer. He supported the Axis during the Second World War. He was a kind of Mussolini in some ways, a Latin American Mussolini. And Mussolini, don't forget, was a socialist originally. Peronism really is a quintessential populist movement, and by that I mean two things. Firstly, that it's always emphasized personal leadership rather than institutions. And secondly, that it's always emphasized economic redistribution to the little guy, if you like, in American terms. No, it's been quite nationalist. It's been at least rhetorically quite anti-big business, but it's always had a right wing and a left wing, and those two sides to it have always fought. In the 1970s, they actually fought with guns, which was tragic for Argentina and ushered in a brutal military dictatorship. Fortunately, nowadays, they do it peacefully. The Kirchners represent the left wing of the Peronists. In the 1970s, when they were students, they were quite close to the Montonero guerrillas, although they weren't actually members of them. And they represent very much that part of the Peronist movement.
So she's the leader of the Victory Front Party. Juan Perón's party was called the Judicialist Party.
Yeah, I mean, Peronism as a political party has kind of fractured and is almost defunct. It's really a movement and a political culture. And the Kirchners set up their own vehicle for this election, but I mean they control the dominant Peronist political machine in the country. And just to go back to pick up on one of your earlier questions, I mean, her vote in this election came very strongly from the Rust Belt suburbs around the city of Buenos Aires and from poorer parts of the country. She didn't win in the federal capital, as the more prosperous inner part of Buenos Aires is called, or in several of the other big cities of the country. That's where Carrió and La Vaña did much better, the middle-class areas of the country.
So Cristina appealed to the same sort of people who idolized Evita.
That's right. The so-called the people who were called the descamisados, the shirtless ones in the 1940s. That's right. I mean, it's their descendants.
But she doesn't. Does she have the same sense of style, the same speaking style as Evita? Evita was came up from the poorest part of the Argentine peasantry, and Cristina is obviously somebody who was. Comes from a very different class.
That's absolutely right, and there's been quite a lot of kind of snide commentary in Argentina about her fondness for designer clothes and plastic surgery and so forth. But she is a feisty public speaker, a much better public speaker than her husband, who's a rather odd, introverted sort of character. So to that extent, she's quite an effective public performer.
Didn't the 1976 to 1983 military dictatorship have something of a Peronist cast to it? And yet the Kirchners have scored political points by prosecuting human rights cases from that period.
Well, that's right. I mean, as I mentioned, I mean, the circumstances in which the dictatorship came to power were those of a civil war within Peronism between its left and right wing factions, and there were elements of the right wing faction of Peronism which supported the dictatorship and indeed collaborated with it. The Kirchners have placed in positions of government several former members of the Montonero guerrilla group that represented the most radical leftist faction of Peronism in the 70s. And so, I mean, the human rights trials that they have supported, well, they're partly for human rights grounds, but there is an element of vengeance, if you like, for those events from the past.
How did the economic collapse in 2001 come about?
Well, that is a vexed question. If you listen to the Kirchners, they will blame the IMF. They say that the liberal economic policies, I mean, the pro-market economic policies pursued by Carlos Menem in the 1990s, the Peronist president in the 1990s, were disastrous, that privatization was a terrible mistake, that everything that went on then was wrong, and so forth. Now, I think many economists outside would say that Argentina adopted the wrong mix of policies, and it was Argentina that adopted those policies, not the IMF, although the IMF made the mistake of supporting them publicly for too long. Not to get too technical, at the heart of those policies was an arrangement whereby the Argentine peso was fixed by law at 1-to-1 with the dollar, which was an attempt to fight the last economic war, which was against hyperinflation. And it succeeded in that, but in order to make that a lasting arrangement, you had to have very responsible fiscal policies so that you saved in the good times, so that you could spend in the bad times, and they didn't do that, is the short answer.
When Néstor was elected in 2003, he had to deal with an $80 billion debt default following the collapse in 2001. And didn't he defy the IMF in the course of engineering the recovery, and also refuse to pay investors for Argentinian bonds that had been held at the time of the collapse?
Yes, I mean that's right. I mean he offered the bondholders who held bonds worth $80 billion what was seen as a very tough deal it turned out to be about 40 cents on the dollar, actually a bit more, In retrospect, I think it was the right thing to do, in the sense that many of those bondholders had actually made an awful lot of money out of Argentine bonds because of the high interest rates that they attracted, and return goes with risk.
But his plan couldn't have made him any friends outside of Argentina, and I assume that it probably scared off some foreign investment.
That's absolutely right, and but what it did achieve was that it made sure that debt payments weren't a drag on the recovery. I think now going forward, Cristina needs to deal with a rather different set of economic problems than he had to deal with. She has to ensure that Argentina re-engages with the world economically, because it does need more foreign investment, and there are still some outstanding debt matters. And above all, she needs to deal with inflation, which is becoming a problem again.
How did Néstor convince the country that he was the right man for solving these problems?
At the time, he was he got there almost by accident in 2003, in the sense there was an interim president, Eduardo Duhalde, who took over, appointed by Congress at the time of the collapse and in very fragile circumstances. When a couple of protesters were killed by police, he decided to cut short his term. He looked around. He was a power in Peronism at the time. He looked around for about four other candidates, all of whom said no, and Néstor Kirchner said yes. Carlos Menem stood against Néstor Kirchner and lost, and refused to compete in a second round, so Néstor Kirchner got there more or less by accident.
My guest is Mike Reed, America's editor at The Economist. This is Backstory, and we're talking about the current situation in Argentina, the election just this past Sunday of Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, who won in a landslide, in effect, because she got 45% of the vote in an election in which she faced 14 opponents. Usually in that kind of situation, there is a runoff because nobody gets enough votes, but she obviously did. And I'm assuming that that's because Argentina has had five straight years of annual growth above 8% and has halved the number of people living in poverty. Was that all because Néstor came up with a great plan?
No, I mean, I think he deserves some of the credit, but by no means all of it. It was partly the bounce back from, if the economy falls so far, once you achieve a certain stability again, then it can grow fast again, because you've got lots of idle factories and businesses and so on that can get going again, and that's what happened. Roberto Lavagna, whom we mentioned, who was the economy minister, in fact appointed before Kirchner came along in 2003, deserves a lot of the credit for putting in place a rational set of policies that included a sound fiscal policy, and he stabilized the exchange rate, and the economy started growing again, helped, it must be said, by a big increase in the world prices for Argentina's farm exports. It's wheat, it's maize, it's corn, it's soya and beef and so forth.
But hasn't inflation also been on the rise in Argentina? Most independent estimates are 15 to 20%, although government estimates are half of that.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I think in the last 2 years, since Kirchner dropped Lavagna as economy minister, and since he's been concentrating on winning this election for his wife, he's thrown caution to the winds. The economy is overheating, is clearly overheating. I mean, you've had a massive increase in public spending this year. Interest rates are negative, basically. The peso remains a little bit undervalued, and inflation has now got to the point where it's starting to erode the gains in terms of fighting poverty, so that the task facing Cristina is to engineer a soft landing the growth drops to about 5% a year, but that's sustainable, 4 to 5% a year, and that inflation is nipped in the bud before it starts getting out of control.
Even the cost of tomatoes has gone up to a point where it's become a news story. And a recent article in The Economist said that Nestor was deliberately allowing the economy to overheat.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's our view. I mean, he did that in order to win the election. I mean, I think the...
Was that smart fiscal policy or was that simply election policy?
I think it was to win the election, as I say. And I think it's also because, it's been popular. I mean, what most Argentines wanted to fight... the current economic battle, which was against unemployment and the lack of growth of the years before the collapse. What they now face is having to fight a battle which they fought and won in the 1990s against inflation, and that's going to take a slightly different set of policies. Those policies will not be particularly popular, and I think it's going to be quite a difficult task for Cristina to get them through.
Well, are those uncomfortable questions the reason that she refused to debate and refused to be interviewed by the Argentine press during the campaign?
I think that may well have quite a lot to do with it, absolutely. I mean, we don't know that she... I mean, she has indicated that she does think inflation is a bit more of a problem than her husband has ever recognized, without saying so in so many words, but she has given that indication. There's a lot of expectation amongst economic commentators in Buenos Aires that she will take steps to cool the economy, but we don't know that she will definitely do that.
She's talked about attracting more foreign investment into Argentina. Do you think it'll be hard to bring that money back into the country after what's happened?
She certainly has. I mean, I think that foreign investors will want to know that they will not be the target of arbitrary changes of policy, which have happened in some sectors under Nestor Kirchner. There are a couple of other outstanding issues as well. There's the question of what to do with the bondholders who did not accept the debt restructuring of 3 years ago. Will they be offered a deal or not? And then there's the question of the debts owed by Argentina to other governments, which are due to be renegotiated in a forum known as the Paris Club. Now, normally, to get a debt restructuring deal at the Paris Club, you need to have the approval of the IMF. Now, there are signs that may be finessed, and there are certainly signs that she understands the importance of these things.
Is this really important to people in the United States? And you have to answer in 10 seconds.
Argentina is a long way away, but it's the same hemisphere, and it's important for the United States that countries in Latin America are prosperous democracies.
Mike Reed is the America's editor at The Economist and the author of Forgotten Continent, The Battle for Latin America's Soul. It's published by Yale University Press. Thank you so much for being on today's Backstory.
Thank you very much.
On tomorrow's show, a look at how the Bush administration used an Iraqi refugee whose code name was Curveball to build its case for the invasion of Iraq. Then the authors of The Daring Book for Girls, a manual that promises to reveal everything girls need to know, and the life of Lee Wiley, who was a favorite singer of George Gershwin and Cole Porter, and yet never achieved the stardom she seemed destined for, plus former Weather Underground member Kathy Wilkinson on how she views her social activism now. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English and Blake Neeschick. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Rachel Krantz, Scott Goldberg, and contributing producer Virginia Doris. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.